Okay, Mr. Lank, you want to turn those lights on, just to wake everybody up? Okay, who's next?
Mr. Chairman, can I ask Ms. Fox a question?
Oh, I'm sorry, that's right. Mr. Ross has a question for you, ma'am.
Awesome.
No, not you.
Mayor.
Yeah.
Ms. Fox, I understood your presentation. I think I try to tie it into the code and the legal aspects, but as we're moving forward into the community's things, the issues being raised, the traffic issue, some of the environmental issues, they could have easily have been raised in opposition to the RPC that was approved in 2007, and they were not, okay? So I'm trying to understand the nexus between why weren't these issues in 2007 and why are they issues today?
Well, I'm going to have to speculate a little bit because I wasn't involved in either side of the project back in 2007 and wasn't a part of any of the hearings then. I've only recently been representing this group. However, having said that, one of the things that we've tried to emphasize this evening, both in my presentation and in the presentation of some of the others that you've heard so far, is that the conditions along Long Neck Road have changed since 2007. I don't know about the environmental issues, but certainly with respect to the traffic, I think that's one of the points that we were trying to emphasize is back in 2007 when this project, the RPC, was approved, and we were speaking in context and in connection with the TIS from 2005, but it's around the same time period that the situation along Long Neck Road has changed since then. So with respect to the traffic, that might be an explanation, but again, you know, for the record and so that I'm clear, I'm speculating about that and about why perhaps it wasn't raised back then. But again, I wasn't involved in that.
So your argument is that you just disagree with DLDOT's interpretation of the TIS and not evaluating it further to address those changes. But
correct.
On the environmental side, there really isn't an explanation other than this is a different project.
Well, sir, that's the only one that I'm aware of.
That's why I was confused. I'm just trying to get. And if you don't answer it, that's fine. Maybe someone else that comes up can, because right now I'm trying to understand why it wasn't then and it is now, unless it's just simply the project.
I like I said, anything that I say is speculation since I wasn't involved in 2007. That might be better addressed by somebody else.
I went back and looked at the minutes from planning and zoning on that because it was the March 8, 2007 meetings. And actually, surprisingly, you know, the commission found that there were no parties present in support of or in opposition to the application.
See what I'm getting at.
For the MRRPC.
Well, I think the case that's in front of us today is this one. What happened in 2007 happened in 2007. I mean, we have to make our decision based on what we hear this evening. So. That's kind of where we are. It is kind of curious, but not particularly relevant. So, okay.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll start all the way in the back in the orange. Yeah. Okay, I need you to sign up here if you would. Then give us your name and then.
Eight years ago, we purchased our...
Ladies and gentlemen, I really appreciate your patience, and I know you've been sitting here a long time, but I can't hear this guy. Okay, go ahead.
8 years ago, we purchased...
Your name is?
James Chillick. I am a resident of the Massey's Landing.
Outstanding. Go ahead.
All right. I got it right that time. 8 years ago, when we bought our home in Massey's Landing, it was sold to us as a stick-built house, not a manufactured home, by the realty company. Now, the first summer that we lived there, we had a foot of water up in the yard that surrounded the house.
Mm-hmm.
So we did all the proper planning. We did all the proper permits. We got permission from the faucets. We're very, very good. We had the house raised and remodeled to a two-story home. It's not a manufactured home. Now, if this zoning goes through, I don't care about the other side of the road. Don't get me wrong. I don't begrudge anybody anything. But when I voiced my concerns to the Fawcetts, I'm sure that they were very honest people, and they told me that I would not have any problems about losing my home because I just can't hook it up and drive it down the road, if you can see what I'm saying. Because we went to the county tax office and we found out we were paying taxes on your manufactured home, and we had that changed. Now we're listed in the tax office as a stick-built house. Our insurance is for a stick-built house, and we're not a manufactured home. And the thing that I'm concerned with, I'm sure that the Fawcetts today have no plans whatsoever about doing a RV park on our side of the little bit of heaven down there, because it is like heaven. It's a great place to live. They're fantastic people. Our concerns are, what about their grandchildren? We just can't move our house. If you change the zoning, we're stuck. What are we going to have to pay to have the house torn down after we spent $75,000 to local contractors and such? Our money down here to the local people to acquire what we have, and that doesn't include what the cost of the building was when we bought there at Massey's. Okay. That's my only concern, you know. I'm trying to protect what I've invested. Sure. And right now, if you put the RV park across the street, I don't care. I don't know if it'll devalue my home or not. I have no idea, because I'm not an expert in that. But I do know that I can't move it, and I'm paying taxes for it. And as soon as I found out it was misrepresented by the previous owners, we went and corrected that right upstairs. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. All right, sir, you there with your hand held up high with the two fingers and the red shirt and glasses. That'd be you with a T-shirt. The champions. What does that shirt say? Temple Owls? Oh, you got to sit down, buddy.
Oh, all right.
Now, go ahead. Put your name on there, and you got the floor, and tell us what's on your mind.
First of all, thank you for your time. Thank you for hearing us all speak tonight, for both support and against.
Okay.
I want to start by saying that...
And you're going to start by saying your name.
My name, yes, I'll get into that. My name's David Gray. I'm from Mariners Cove.
Okay.
I'm also the appointed webmaster for the website.
Okay.
So for the record, I have seen the plus plan, reviewed it, as well as the state's answer.
Great.
So I take exception to the earlier implications to the contrary. Simply stated, I have two questions.
Okay.
Question the first, it was highlighted in one of the presentations about the model homes or model RVs that will be left there for a period of 6 months. In the event of a flood or evacuation situation, who would be responsible for removing those, or where would they go? If it would be an employee that had moved their car, plus come back and get the RV model home, or it could very well float away.
Oh.
My second question, if it's already been answered, I apologize. What sort of safety, public safety, or fire prevention measures are they taking? Will there be a fire plug on site? Will there be fire extinguishers? Will there be a public safety officer? Will there be access to state trooper?
Okay.
I don't know there's a state trooper barracks. I know there's Troop 7, but they have to get down Lonick Road to get there. EMS will have a problem with getting there and locating the people there. They're, not if they have an address, they can say, well, I'm at 35,000 this road.
Okay.
So thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Mr. Fuqua, do you want to take a shot at this man's questions? He did raise a couple of valid questions.
Yeah, another valid question. Jeff, do you
want to? I'm going to answer one of the questions, and then I think we're going to have Kathy
okay,
answer the
other.
Okay, that's fine. Regarding the fire protection measures, that specific question,
right.
Met with the fire marshal. We've met with the Indian River Fire Department. There's going to be fire hydrants throughout the site. It's a combination of hydrants tapped to the water system, which is connected to Longneck's water system. Also, a series of dry hydrants. I also believe that all the structures have
up here.
Have fire extinguishers. I'm pretty sure she can comment on that. But as you know, we have to get approval from the fire marshal. We have to satisfy their request, and we will do that.
Okay. Okay. Real quick. Here we go. Who's going to move those things? You?
I'm going to speak about moving them, yes. We can have one of the park models unhooked and moved in approximately 20 minutes. Everything's mobile. Everything can be pulled away, unhitched, hooked up to a truck, and pulled inland. We did it with Hurricane Sandy, and so we have it down to a science.
Okay, thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am, with the pencil in your hand. You'll sign our little sheet there if you would.
Thank you.
Start off by telling us who you are, and you may have the floor. You've been waiting a long time.
Thank you very much. My name is Betty Greenewalt. I'm president of Lakeside Community Homeowners Group, Potnets Lakeside. I live in a community that is 90% full-time residents. 89% of us are over the age of 65. Emergency comes in our community many times a day. It happens with this age group. But I'm concerned also, and you've heard the traffic, but I'm going to remind you of a few factors. 5 months out of the year that this RV park is open, school buses travel up and down Long Neck Road. They discharge children, and they run to either side to their communities. Sometimes they come into the communities to discharge them. Then, 2 months out of the year, the school buses are picking up and discharging campers who are going to day camps. There is also nothing on Long Neck Road for youth. There are no malls. There's no movie theater. There's no rec center. There's nothing except what's in the communities. I know Potnets. Potnets is not going to open up their pools, their bocce courts, their tennis courts, their facilities, their amenities to transients. If you think golf carts don't run up and down Long Neck Road, you're mistaken. They do. Today, in preparation for this meeting, I stopped going east from Lakeside to the main entrance, Potnets Road, at Bayside. Took my tape measure out of my glove compartment and measured the breakdown lane in two spots. It ran from 4.5 feet to 5.5 feet. I have yet to see an RV that would fit in either those two spots. Be in one of the communities on Long Neck Road on a weekend, and all you hear is emergency flying down that road and flying back up. It cannot support an RV park. We cannot have an increase in crime, which we have enough of already. We have no police force. Yes, we have a state policeman sometimes. It can take up for an hour for the police to get to your home. And Lakeside is fortunate. We have a way to get out, not on Long Neck Road, but that entrance will not support RVs cutting through to miss five traffic lights. Please turn this park down. Thank you.
Okay, we thank you. Okay, who's next? Over on this side. Yes, sir. Come on up. Sign our little paper there, if you would, and then give us your name.
Not a problem. I used to public speaking. My name's Sean Kirkpatrick. I live in Potnets Seaside. I'm a full-time resident there. I'm also a degreed engineer.
What kind of engineering?
Chemical engineering.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not a traffic guy by any stretch.
Okay.
But I do deal with facts, as the lawyer for the faucets talked about quite a bit.
Okay.
The Department of Transportation study, the TIS, that was done in 05, I believe it was based on houses and townhouses being on this property. So they also used the Institute of transportation engineer's ITS trip generation report to figure out what was the impact of that that they were studying in 05.
Right.
On page 4 of the PLUS report, at the very bottom where they had their chart, there's a note that says, because ITE has no data on daily trip generation of RV parks, we treated them as recreational homes for this purpose. To me, that's a heck of an assumption. You're saying that an RV is the same as a Honda Civic running up and down the road? It's not. I live on Log Neck Road. Sometimes it's very tough. The weekends especially, with everyone headed down to put their boats in the water, which is perfectly fine, it's tough to get in and out. Our emergency services are going to have a tough time if they're trying to get around RVs crawling up and down the road. And so to me, I would ask, maybe the council can go to Deldon and say, guys, you got to come up with a standard for RVs. If the Institute of Transportation Engineers, like some of the council already suggested, maybe they need to find another standard. Okay, we're going to park 300 RVs down at the end of this 5-mile-long road, no way in, no way out. We need a standard to know, is this a good idea or not? Thank you very much for your time.
All right, sir. We thank you. Okay, we'll do one over here. Yes, ma'am, you with the blue pen in the air. And then somebody over here with their hand up. Yeah, you'll be next, okay? First this lady in the green, and then it'll be your turn. You would sign up on our little sheet there.
I brought my own pen.
And you brought your own pen.
I'm efficient.
Right.
That's because I'm a teacher.
Okay, what do you teach?
By trade, I'm an English teacher, but currently I'm teaching character education throughout the Sussex County.
Great. Super.
My name is Paulette Rappa, and I am the current Long Neck Elementary School's PTO president. And I do concur with the two previous, Betty Greenwalt, that, in fact, during those 5 months that the park would be open, there would be an impact on the school bus drive. Right now, Long Neck Elementary School is at capacity. It's 710. It's projected to go up to 780. Right now, my son, I have a fifth grader enrolled in that school. In order to get him to school in the morning, it's 45 minutes. I live 2 miles away. It is shorter coming back. The reason for the longer delay is, A, the traffic pattern, the fact that we are low density, they have to travel further, but also because of the early morning breakfast to get those children there. If we have more traffic, you have to allow them to have breakfast before school opens.
I get it, yeah.
If we do allow more traffic on that road, that bus traffic is going to be further delayed. The other question I do have, with respect to the buses, but also with respect to emergency personnel, is if you do have that turnaround in front of Potnets Bayside, how does that affect emergency personnel coming through? Because I know what Georgetown Circle looks like. I know what Rehoboth Beach Circle looks like when it's high density, high traffic times. How does that impact when you're trying to get buses through and or emergency personnel? That was my question.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
All right, sir.
My name is Bob Tiger.
A little piece of paper there, if you would, please. And then you can tell us who you are.
All right. How do you work this then?
You can have the floor or a cap.
That's not a pen, is it?
Your cap.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Thank you.
It's getting late. Fine. You take all the time you need. I have to be in Bridgeville at 6:44 tomorrow morning. And that's the truth. Actually, it's 6:21.
I believe. My name is Bob Teichert. I live on Long Neck Road, Creeks End Development.
Okay.
And it was touched on Massey's boat ramp.
Mm-hmm.
State ramp. That thing gets packed on weekends today.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what it's going to be like with 300 more campers. Probably half of them are going to bring boats down there. Where in the world are all them boats going to go? Boat trailers going to go? I mean, nobody talked about all those boat trailers. So is there provisions in this park for boat trailers? Because there won't be enough in Massey's parking lot. They'll just line up the road further than they are now, I guess. That's all I have, sir.
All right, I'll try to find out. It's a good question. Mr. Fuquay, somebody on your team want to tell us what's going to happen with all the boat trailers?
Here's one. There is parking on each site, as it's shown on the site plan, so they can use that for their car and their boat trailer. That's at the camper's discretion.
Okay, so there's on-site parking. On-site parking for the boat trailers, is that what you're saying?
There's parking spaces for boat trailers and automobiles on the camps, on each campsite. So they can do two cars or a boat and a car.
Okay, thank you. All right, who's next? Going well, there we go. Yes, sir, green hat, come on up. Green shirt, green shorts. Is it easy being green? Is it easy being green? Pull it apart. There you go.
Okay.
Slide the cap on the back of it and leave it off so that we don't have to go through that again.
My name is Denny Kaufman. I do not live on Long Neck. I live on Route 24. Different subject here. I fish a lot at Massey's Landing.
Okay.
It's the only handicapped pier around that you can get out of your car and walk 20 feet and fish. They only have 20 parking places there, I believe it was said. And if only 10% of those people come down from the park to fish, it'll be a disaster. There will be no fishing for local people.
Okay.
If they have golf carts running around that area where boats are parked and they have boats on their trailers, it's a big blind spot.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be very hazardous for people with golf carts or bicycles and stuff. And so just for fishing purposes and people going in and out with boats and stuff, it'll be a disaster for you know, hazard. Mm-hmm. As far as the boat rental they're going to have, canoes and kayaks and stuff, if those people get out in that river too far, that current is very swift, and there's going to be problems there.
Okay. If,
even far as people fishing, throwing lures and stuff out, and that type of stuff. So the RV is really going to be, and like I said, if people drive down there to park, if I come from Lewis or people come from Millsboro, drive a half an hour, there's no place for us to park. You know, that's why.
Not that you'd want to do this, but there is a really nice handicap pier on Records Pond in Laurel. Really nice.
That's fresh water.
I walk by it every day.
That's fresh water, right?
It is. It is.
Case closed.
Right.
Salt water.
Just trying to help.
I know.
Okay, all the way in the back, the lady in the stripes. And unfortunately, you're going to have to pull that cap off that pen because he didn't listen very well.
Well, I can't even find the pen.
Take the pen.
There it is.
Oh. There you go. Now, I want you to stick the cap on the back of that pen.
You know, exactly, to the next person.
There you go.
Thank you. Well, look, we could do the job
so
together.
Well.
My name is Joan Race, and I live in Potnets Coveside. I've been there 5 years. That's a fact, and I love it there.
Okay.
My concern, and I'm almost going to repeat what the gentleman just brought up at the very end,
okay,
was we live on the Rehoboth Bay side. So when we could leave Rehoboth Bay, we come by the Fawcett property into Massey's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous there as it is. It's a no-wake zone. But I cannot imagine people being in those waters. If you come out of dockside, right past the canals that they're showing, into Massey's there, I cannot imagine there's going to be kayakers and canoers. So
there's none out there now. They don't. Nobody uses it now.
No, I mean, you're using pontoons, and they've rerouted from Rehoboth Bay. They want you to go the back way around the island and come out to Indian River instead of going through Massey's, because there's just too much traffic. And now we're going to put children and people and sunfish. I mean, maybe I don't understand where they're talking about doing that, but that's just my concern. So maybe you can just study that a little bit more. My issue is safety. I have 84-year-old parents that live in Coveside around the corner. Ambulances are there. So The kids adding 40 minutes to get to school, ambulances, fire engines, very, very concerned about the traffic. All right, thank you, gentlemen.
You're welcome. We thank you. Okay, who's next? All the way in the back over here with your hand in the air. That would be you. Stand up quick, somebody. There we go. Let me tell you how this works. When I say you with your hand in the air, if you jump up right away, you're next, okay?
Okay, my name is Bill Holson. I live in Massey's Landing Park since 1977. And the concern I have mostly, and forget the traffic at this point, it's been beat to death, is they're saying they're going to bring in over 300 RVs per week with an average of three people in these RVs.
Right.
We're talking about 1,000 transients a week. Most people are honest people. There's people in these in the RVs have their RV park to be in, where we're supposed to stay out of because we're not renting a place and we're not in there.
Right.
What's to keep them, when they decide they want to, if there's a 50-foot barrier, from walking down into somebody's backyard, from walking down the street I live on, through my yard, and it's just a safety issue with that many more people in the area for the communities that are adjacent to it. My concern.
Okay. We thank you.
Out for us
RV. I was going to say, you RV people, Mike, I don't know about you. Well, it's a valid concern. I mean, I understand what you're saying. Who's next? Quick. All right, over here. In the teal. Color that goes with everything.
I didn't realize you're such a fashion expert.
I am. I'm a real fashionista.
Hello. My name is Mary Hecker, and I'm the president of the Massey's Landing Homeowners Association. So, Ms. Fox informed you earlier that she was hired by our association. I was one of the people that had a hand in hiring her. I represent the 67 homeowners of Massey's Landing that decided to join. We do have 96 homeowners in there. I would like to address Mr. Ross's question earlier. He asked Ms. Fox where we were in 2007. I purchased my home in Massey's Landing on December 15th of this past year. On January 15th, I received a phone call, and I was told that the park that I just purchased a home in was going to be turned into an RV park. That's when I became involved in opposition of this plan. My in-laws purchased a home the day after I did and spent a lot more money, and I had to call them and tell them that their home was going to be an RV home. So with the residents' concerns and knowing people in there, I think they felt that Jeff and I were the ones to take charge. They had long family ties. They came to us, and they said, we weren't opposed in 2007. And, okay, that's great, because they felt that this was a family, that the Fawcetts were their family. They knew their children. They knew their grandchildren. And they felt that Mr. and Mrs. Fawcett had the best idea in mind, that they could keep their homes and the Fawcett family could still get an income and have a smaller number of homes on that property. They didn't feel that it was the right thing to oppose the Fawcetts as a family because they loved them at the time. I think what happens is emotions became involved, and everyone, and I'm not lying when I say this, there are people in this room that said to me, I loved Linford. Now, the Linford that they're speaking of has since passed away. I did not have a chance to meet him. They've all spoke very highly of Ida. I have not yet met her, and I've been a resident of her park since December. I just want Mr. Ross to understand that they weren't motivated because they weren't afraid for losing everything that they had put their money into. They weren't afraid necessarily for their safety because they thought that things were different at that time. Obviously, fear and emotion and financial constraints will take over some time, and that's why we're all sitting in front of you tonight. Thank you.
All right, very good. Mr. Ross, does that answer your question?
at least partially. I mean, okay. the odd thing is, guess what, while she comes up, guess what my sister's name is?
What?
Mary Hacker.
Get out of town.
What's
impressed me is the number of left-handed people that have come up here tonight. Of course, not this guy, but, you know. I'm serious. You know, we're supposed to be 5% of the population. I think we're all here. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Wheatley and the board. I'm Jim Gervin, and I don't live anymore in a mobile home. I did at one time until the rental rates got me pretty bad. Now I live off Long Neck Road in a community called Creek's End. Mm-hmm. I own my land and I own my house, mm-hmm. and I look at Guinea Creek. I've been coming up and down Long Neck Road since, and with all due respect to you, sir, the first time I was ever on
Long Neck. Hey, sir, I need you to direct your comments.
The first time I was ever on Long Neck Road, it was nothing but clamshells.
Okay.
Never any concrete. It's been a long time since 1957. I think that these people who have spoken to you tonight have spoken to you from their hearts, both positive and negative. Mm-hmm. All of you have been very kind, and you must have wonderful bottoms that you can... But I do notice that your chairs are a little bit softer than ours. Just a little bit softer than ours. And you've got great ability to hear us. There are two points I would try to make. The people who you're hearing from are extremely sincere about their desire to have a park. They want it real bad. It's a good idea for the family. But then you got a book full of people who signed up who don't really want this to happen. You've had lots of reasons. Environmental ones, a lot of them. We haven't heard too much about the archaeological items that may be found on this property that could slow down the development pretty badly. We haven't heard anything about my friend back here, who is the president of our association, took pictures along Massey's Ditch. With all due respect to the family that owns the property, it has become a dumping ground all along that shore. There's nothing but pieces of asphalt, broken concrete, and other kinds of things at the waterline of Massey's Ditch from that property. Those photographs were taken within the last 2-3 days. They're still there. So therefore, there are concerns of all of us, both positive and negative. You have a big job on your hands, gentlemen, and you're going to have to listen to all of us and read all this stuff. But in the end, you'll do what Pete Schwarzkopf helped us do from Creek's End when we got that corner at Long Neck Road and the road to the school improved. That took a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It took almost 5 years for us to help to generate his assistance. Now, I don't know who needs to assist us in talking to you about the decision you have to make that's of a political, quote, type. We haven't met them yet. Some of them are, and we won't get into that issue.
There are five of them, okay?
All right.
Every one of them are on county council.
Well, then, because I guess...
What this body does is makes a recommendation to them.
Right.
Okay. Our job is to weigh all this testimony against the ordinance that is in place, and then we make a recommendation. And then county council will make the final decision. They, by the way, are also the ones who make the ordinance, okay? So if you have those types of issues, that's kind of where, you guys all know you're going to do this again, right? You know you've got another one, okay? Okay, well, show up. you know, and that's really where that final decision is made. And those five people are the ones who have the ability to change the ordinance, to address some of the things. Our scope is somewhat limited because we have the ordinance to compare the application to, and then we make a recommendation. It's not really about how many people are for or how many are against. It's about how does it compare to the ordinance that we have in place. And both sides, everyone, you're right, we have a difficult job, a lot of testimony, both sides, good testimony has to be considered. Legal, good legally grounded testimony has to be considered. So I appreciate you appreciating that.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you've identified the decision makers.
Well, there you go.
You know, and that's important for us who are listening. I would point up to one last item, and that is all of those people who signed all those petitions for you not to approve this, and yet this evening, no one else showed up other than the family members to speak to you in support of what decision you have to make. That says something, gentlemen. Gives you a serious message, a really serious message. The family wants it, but what about the people that live in the community? And that's us. Thank you for your time.
All right, sir. We thank you. Okay, who's next? Going once. No, one trip to a customer. Okay, one trip to a customer. The man told you that in the beginning, if you were listening. Okay, if you weren't, he still told you. You just didn't hear. Anybody else? Anyone else wish to speak in opposition? Going twice? Okay, now, we're going to close the public hearing, but before I do, a couple of things. Number one, you've been sitting here for 4 hours and 17 minutes, and you've done a wonderful job. You've been mostly well-behaved, and you're really a good-looking group of people. Now, I'm going to ask you for one more favor. You may not believe this. We have more business to transact after you leave. We're not done when I say this public hearing's over. So I'm going to ask you to please, when I say we're done, unless you're going to stay until the end, which you're welcome to do, okay? I want you to get up and get out of here, okay? Quietly. Don't want you talk. Don't get up and start talking. We have business to transact, okay? Thank you all so much for coming. We'll close the public hearing. You are welcome to stay with us to see if we make a decision, or you may all wish to call the office tomorrow.